This is Real Talk, the Customer Insights Show with Jen Vogel, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox PopMe, the leader in video research and ranked number one in qualitative research by Grit 2 years running. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Vogel. We talk a lot about listening to customers on this show, but how about getting them to actually talk to us? Survey response rates have been dropping dramatically over the last several years. Not a topic anybody likes to talk about, but we have to. We're going to talk today about what we can do about those dropping response rates. And to discuss that topic, I'm joined by Colin Shaw, a global influencer in customer experience and marketing, founder and CEO of Beyond Philosophy. Welcome to the show, Colin.
Oh, hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today on this lovely Monday?
I'm well. I'm looking forward to discussing this topic. It's a really interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited too. And before we dive into that, can you give us a quick overview of your career as a customer-driven growth leader and influencer?
I won't bore everybody. I'll just talk for the next half an hour. My background is basically working in large blue chips. I did that for, my first career. Perhaps I should call it that. And then about 20 years ago, my boss said to me, Colin, I'd like you to improve the customer experience and do it at least cost. So we did a program in literally the turn of the century. That does make me sound old, doesn't it? 20 years ago. Realized there's a thing called customer experience, decided to leave the corporate world and set up my own company. So did that 20 years ago. Since then, written 7 books on the subject of customer experience. Financial Times has recognized us as the one of the leading management consultancies for the last 4 years in a row. And we do a podcast as well every week called The Intuitive Customer. And got 300,000 followers on LinkedIn. So you're welcome to if you think what I'm saying is sensible, then follow me on there afterwards. But yeah, I mean, that's the brief potted background history.
I mean, good start, right? Like,
yeah, not bad. I worried when I left corporate life, as you do with a big salary and everything else. And my kids were just about to go to university. I did think to myself, what happens if this all goes wrong and I find my first book in some bargain basement store for selling for 25 cents? Fortunately, that hasn't happened.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, certainly from what I know about you, you definitely are an expert on the subject. So I'm excited to get your take. There's a reason why you're an influencer on LinkedIn and you've written so many books. It's not because you don't know what you're talking about. That's for sure.
I guess time will tell.
Time will tell. Yeah, that's my goal. I'm going to discover that today. No. let's just jump right into response rates. When it comes to response rates for customer feedback, it's a huge part of customer experience and being able to improve those experiences. How do you feel like companies are doing currently with getting the response rates they need?
I don't think they are they, really? I mean, we all know that response rates are declining and we all know that, you know. To a certain extent, I think it's the wrong question, okay? And what do I mean by that? I think what it shows is that organizations don't really understand their customers. And when we've looked at a customer experience and we look at customers and, you know, let me be clear, responding to a survey is part of a customer experience. Okay. It shows the world and your customers what you think is important to you. Okay. And it sort of, to a certain extent, it also gives you clues as to even the culture of the organization and what they see as important. And therefore, I think the issue for me becomes this, that really organizations don't really understand their customers well enough and at a deep enough level. So when we look at an experience, we would look at it from the rational parts of an experience. We would look at it from how a customer is feeling. We would look at what are the subconscious messages that the customers are receiving about your organization. So a subconscious message would be you've got the things that you're conscious of. So think about the fact that you're breathing. Okay. Now I've said that you're breathing, you're now thinking, oh yes, I've just breathed in and I'm just about to breathe out. Okay. You were breathing, I hope, before we had this conversation. But I've raised it into your consciousness from being in your subconscious, that you weren't aware of it. So there's a subconscious part of an experience. And then there's this whole area of behavioral science, okay? And behavioral science, you could call it psychology, you could call it behavioral economics, but it really gets into the detail of why people do what they do, okay? And so, you know, let me give you an example. And this sort of ties together the part of the issue that I think that the industry is facing. Disney know that when they ask their customers what they want them to eat at a theme park, Disney know that people say they'd like to have an option of a salad. So they do some insights. Customers say, yes, we would like to have an option of a salad. Disney also know that people don't eat salads at theme parks. They eat hot dogs and hamburgers. So, you know, the issue becomes, and my second book was on customer centricity. So I always find it a bit difficult saying this, okay? But effectively, sometimes you shouldn't ask customers what they want, because what they tell you and what they want, and more importantly, what drives value. And when I say the word value, I'm now talking about improvements in net promoter, improvements in revenue, et cetera, et cetera. So what drives value can be different. So what customers say, what customers do as a result, yeah, can be very different. And here's the rub. Unfortunately, surveys typically are not designed to pick those things up, okay? They're not really designed, unless they're more advanced, to pick up those differences. And I would even go so far as to say surveys are not necessarily the best method of picking those things up. And the last virtual thing I'm going to say, because I'm sure you're going to pick me up on some of these things, is that even when they get the information back, I'm not sure that people look at that information in the right way through the lens of behavioral science. So understanding really what the customer is saying, rather than, you know, looking at the subtext, if you like, of that customer's responses, rather than just saying, oh, we surveyed our customers. Did they like this product? Did they like that product? Did they like that product? They like product B, so let's sell them product B. You know, I'm afraid life isn't as simple as that. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. So many things to unpack in what you've said, but it does make a lot of sense. And, you know, this follows on the episode that we did last week. I interviewed Ryan Fitzpatrick, the author of The Mom Test, and he said exactly this. You can't ask people what they might or should or want to do, because sure, they're going to lie to you, not on purpose, but subconsciously, sure, they're going to lie to you that it's, you need to approach these sorts of interactions with customers or prospective customers by asking them, you know, questions they can't get wrong. You know, what, tell me about the last time you went to Disney. Like, did you have a Dole Whip. Yes. The answer is always yes, right? Those are the things that people are eating when they're going to theme parks as opposed to what might you do? Those hypotheticals are not good, valid sources of data. And, you know,
and,
I think,
and it's even from a, even from the, I'm picking up on that, even from, you know, we're talking here about customer insights. Okay. An insight doesn't have to just come from a survey. You know, what we, you know, one of the best ways of finding out what the customer wants is by looking at what they do. So, you know, ethnographics, look, you know, physically watching customers. You know, there's that you can facial recognition, facial expression. You can do that over the web now. So, you know, you can through facial expression, you can pick up the micro expressions. You know, your pupils dilating, your eyebrows going up by a millimeter. You know, something like that, that will indicate the emotion that you are feeling. And at that particular point, it may not be that the customer has even realized that they are feeling that emotion, which affects what they do. So for me, you know, surveys are one method, but there are lots of other methods that you can also use to collect data that I would even go so far as to say that are better methods, simply because, you know, you're looking at what they're doing rather than what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, is that, do you think that that is the solution for the response rate problem that, you know, on the quantitative side surveys are seeing? Is it that you need more human connection or ethnography or observation through other methods versus companies trying to tackle this, the response rate problem?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the response rate problem is going to go away. Okay. Mm-hmm. I you know, what I've learned over the years is there's never ever simple answers to things, and it's never one answer. So if you're attending this session and you think the answer is going to be do this and that's going to solve your response rate problem, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, that's not going to happen. The true answer for me is, I'm not saying that you should junk surveys. I'm not saying that you shouldn't try to improve the response rate, but I'm also saying I don't believe that you should just be relying on surveys to show you exactly what the customer's doing. What I've learned over the years in many different walks of life, is that there's never one answer. You need to be doing a series of things. So yeah, do some surveys, but just don't rely on surveys. Look at, you know, go and look at what customers are doing. You know, do some qualitative research as well. You know, look at various different ways of looking at things. But you then, and the great thing about today is that obviously with lots of things going online, it means that we get to look at a lot of numbers. Okay, because, you know, there's lots of stuff coming in from the web, and you can measure lots of things. Okay, that means that you can do lots and lots of testing. Okay, I haven't spoken about that. You know, there are lots of ways of doing A/B testing now to find out which is going to give you the biggest response rates. Mm-hmm. But finally, the really big picture is, when you've done all of that, are you looking at these things through the lens of behavioral science? So do you understand actually why people do what they do, and why are they motivated in the way that they are? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. And that's a harder question to answer.
Yes.
You know, what are people doing is easy. We can, like I said, we can pull that data from, you know, any shopper data or any behavioral data online. What are people doing? But why they do it takes a really special skill. And oftentimes, as you mentioned, we as consumers can't articulate why we do things a certain way. You know, I can't tell you why I don't know, put the windows down in my car at a certain, to a certain level. Like sure. There is a very specific level I like my window down to. I don't know why. I can't explain that to you.
I have to say that is strange.
Is it?
Mighty joke.
It's probably not the strangest thing about me, but but that's fine.
No, well, I think that just goes to show, doesn't it, that, you know, we like to think that we're logical animals. You know, I'm sure in your business life, my business life, you know, we think we make logical choices, but we don't. Okay. So I really don't think it is necessarily as difficult as you make it sound, or not make you make it sound, but the way that it sounds. So here's the issue. Behavioral science sounds very grand, okay, but I don't think it is. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we do a podcast with, I do a podcast called The Intuitive Customer with Professor Ryan Hamilton. Okay, he teaches consumer psychology at Emory University. That was the subject of our last book, you know, Customer Experience and Behavioral Science, and he co-authored it with me. The long and short of it is, and the message I'm trying to get over is, Ryan comes at it from a very academic perspective. I come at it from a very practical business perspective. So let me give you an example, and then let me give you a sort of a hypothetical way it can be dealt with. So in behavioral science, there are things called heuristics. Again, sounds very grand, but actually it's pretty easy. Heuristics are rules of thumb. They are the way that human beings have designed to make decision-making easier for us. So we have lots of rules of thumb that we use. So let me give you two examples of that. We're having some work done around the house at the moment. And whenever we have work done around the house and we get a decorator in and, you know, plumber or whatever it may be, we always get three quotes. We never go with the most expensive. We never go with the cheapest. We always go for the one in the middle. Okay. That is called extremeness aversion. Okay. And most people apply extremeness aversion to their decision making. In other words, we human beings don't like extremes. Don't go with the most expensive. Don't go for the least expensive. Go for the one in the middle. Okay. So given that that is a rule of thumb, when you're looking at your data, do you see that pattern emerging from three options that you're getting from your survey data or what they're doing? Let me give you another example. I spend half my life in Florida. And in Florida, as everybody knows, it thunderstorms a lot. And when it thunderstorms, the power goes out. And when the power goes out, the internet drops out, and then all hell breaks loose. So I decided that I was going to buy an uninterruptible power supply. Okay. I know nothing about uninterruptible power supplies. So when I went on to Amazon to look at power uninterruptible power supplies, it started to give me all of this information about the different products that I could buy. And I hadn't got a bloody clue what any of it meant. The only thing that I could see that I could understand was how long would the power last if you kept this plugged in? Okay. You know, I couldn't tell you what the wattage was or what the amperages were, et cetera, et cetera. And so the only way that I could make a decision is upon, well, how long does, you know, how long would it last? Now, that is called the evaluability heuristic, okay? And again, what human beings do is we look for the thing, when we are trying to make a complex decision, we look for the thing that is going to make our decision easy, i.e., I know how long it was going to be lasting, therefore that's how I'm going to make a decision, therefore I'm going to choose this one, yeah? But again, the issue, and if you think about it, we do that when we just think about voting. Voting is, you know, for a politician, voting is actually quite complicated because there are lots of policies and somebody's saying this policy, somebody's saying that policy. And you're thinking, well, I'm not really sure about, you know, well, they say this and they say that. And I like that bit, but I don't really like that bit. So what do people do subconsciously? They make a large part of their judgment is, do I like this person? Do I think I could go down to a bar and have a beer with this person? You know, and we make decisions like that. So the point, again, I'm trying to make is understanding that there's this evaluability heuristic, okay, which, you know, goes back to it, the time for an uninterruptible power supply, how long it will last, then you can find out those things through surveys. You can find out those things through eye tracking and heat sensing on what part of the screen that, you know, the customer's looking at. You can find out those things by doing deep dives into qualitative research, by asking customers and diving down deeper about what, you know, do you understand about wattage? Do you understand about amperages? Do you understand about this, et cetera, et cetera? And then you can start to discover, well, which, you know, what's the key thing? And therefore, which are the things that we should be promoting more? And which are the things we should be highlighting more? And just one final thing, just, I don't want to make things too complicated, but there are clearly people that do understand that stuff. So now we're into segmentation. I'm part of the segment that goes, I haven't got a bloody clue about wattages and amperages, but I just want to know about how long it's going to last. My son-in-law knows all the stuff about that. And he wouldn't look about that. He would go, oh, yes, but it depends on how much power is being sucked by individual devices. And I'm going, oh, phew, what? But you get the idea. So there's that group of people and there's this group of people. And then now we're into segmentation and the approach that you should take in surveys, in looking at people, in understanding what they do, is going to be different by different customer segments as well. But now we're getting into that layer of understanding customer behavior to be able to make a choice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, not all customers are created equal. You know, everyone's coming with their own knowledge and experience. And as you were describing your kind of purchase of your power supply, I was thinking about like Donald Miller and his positioning, you know, framework. And he talks about how people don't buy the best products. They buy the products that they understand the fastest, which is exactly what you're describing. Correct. You know, it's like, how much energy do I have to put into figuring this stuff out? You know, I have no idea the capabilities from a like spec perspective of like my phone.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if my phone's any better or worse than a Google phone or a Samsung or whatever, but you know, I buy the one that I understand the fastest. And all of that happens subconsciously. And I want to ask about, like, you know, as we're talking about, the goal here is improving customer experience, like improving customer loyalty. So we need to be doing this kind of research and digging out these insights, but there isn't one way, right? You've talked about behavioral science. You've talked about qualitative ethnography. There is a place for surveys. Like, how do you think about all of those things working together to help you to make those decisions to create better experiences?
Yeah, so I think, again, it depends upon the type of thing that you're surveying or the type of insight that you're trying to get. You know, are you talking about a large, expensive computer system, or are you talking about an uninterruptible power supply that you can buy on Amazon? You know, different layers of complexity. And then I think you're obviously then talking about the different customer segments from then. But I think it's a question... And then not least of which is the subject of budget comes up because, well, how much money have we got to do all these things? Because it's all right talking about all this stuff, but how much budget is coming up there? So I think you've got to make, I can't give you one answer. You've got to look at each of those channels and start to understand it. I mean, the other area that we haven't spoken about is the whole area of social media and what people are saying on social media, okay? Mm-hmm. Because just even, you know, customer complaints, what people are saying when they're contacting into the call center. You know, you're now into the whole area of the way that organizations even think about a customer complaint. So, and the reason I'm raising this here is, for me, customer complaint is free market research, okay? Mm-hmm. Because customers are giving you feedback on your experience or the product that you have. And yet, is that brought into the mix? Or are complaints sort of suppressed and seen as a bad thing, where I would be encouraging, and you know, the different channels to collect customer feedback that becomes a richer part of all of that mix as you're going on. And the final thing I guess I would say is that, and this is again a really big area that most organizations fail to act upon. We've talked about, you know, and again, when we look at an experience, we talk about rational, emotional, subconscious, and psychological, or the behavioral science. And we've talked a bit about that behavioral science piece. But let's just talk about emotions for a moment, okay? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you talk about loyalty. Well, in fact, Jen, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Who are the people that you are loyal to in your life? So think about your personal life. Who are the people you're loyal to, truly loyal to?
My son.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably so, not much more than that.
Well, but you see,
number
you know,
one.
But does your son do things that you don't like? Undoubtedly.
Constantly.
But you still love him, okay?
I do. So, unconditionally, yeah.
Unconditionally, absolutely. Yep. So the thing is that when you talk about loyalty, and you talk about when we start talking about true loyalty, loyalty is an emotional attachment. Okay, mm-hmm. You have an emotional attachment to your son, you know, to your family. So the issue then becomes this: what emotions are your customers feeling? Yeah. So we talk about loyalty in business as if it's some form of right that we have to have with customers, mm-hmm. You know, and typically in businesses, loyalty means the customer gives us all their business. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's actually an emotional attachment. Yeah. And therefore the issue becomes this, which is, well, think about, and I'd like your audience to think about, how many times are they doing surveys or collecting information about the emotions that you are evoking in your customers? Yeah. So, and here's a question for you, the audience again. Which emotions drive most value for you, for your organization? And are you measuring those emotions? So for my third book, The DNA of Customer Experience, How Emotions Drive Value, we did 2 years worth of research with London Business School to identify the emotions that drove most value. And when I say value, I'm talking about increasing customer satisfaction, net promoter, so on and so forth. And this was back in 2005. And we've been doing this research then ever since. With different organizations. And what we discovered is that there are these 20 emotions. So things like trust, cared for, pleased, a destroyer is happy, unsatisfied, stressed, hurried, emotions like that. So which emotion are you trying to evoke in your customers? And are you measuring it? Are you surveying your customers on it? Are you, and the connection here is with social media, are you reading social media or customer complaints and interpreting what you are seeing and sort of classifying some of those things into how the customer is feeling? Yeah. So, you know, is your customer saying things like, you know, it really made me feel stressed, or I really felt that I was being hurried or rushed by your people. because those are destroying emotions and those things will decline revenue. So you can start to say, well, when we, you know, sentiment analysis, when we're looking at what the sentiment of what the customer's getting over here, we can equate it to this emotion. And how are we going to design our experience to provide that, to actually evoke those emotions? And again, this is all part of, you know, go back to that behavioral science. This is all part of that. It's understanding how to evoke customer emotions and which emotions that you're planning to evoke. Does that make sense? And therefore, the measurement of those things.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think what you said about loyalty not being a right is really powerful. That it is that you've got to do some work to create an experience. I mean, obviously, we're talking about customer experience, but to create this emotion, and you have to be know what that is, to, which I think is the step that a lot of people skip. Know what is that emotion that you're trying to drive, and are you measuring it? There's a lot of sentiment analysis that goes on, and a lot of, you know, seeing are people delighted? You know, we talk about surprising and delighting customers, right? But really identifying, like, what are we trying to achieve here, and are we doing it? P&G does a great job of making moms cry every Olympics with their ads, right? Like, you can very clearly see what they're trying to make you feel, which is surprising from, you know, laundry brands or things like that. But, you know, it's not always so clear with other brands. And I wonder if it's that they haven't identified what emotion they're trying to drive.
Well, I think this goes back to businesses have relied heavily on just the left brain aspects of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, the product or the whatever that they're selling, but they haven't thought about those emotional things. Typically, adverts do talk about emotions. Mm-hmm. Typically, the other parts of the organization, you know, don't. So I used to run call centers. Okay. And you know, when you phone a call center, particularly today, I mean, here's the irony. We actually had there's a thing called the American Customer Satisfaction Index. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's been going since 1999. It's talking about how it's an index that measures customer satisfaction over that period of time. And on the podcast, we had the president on it a little while ago, talking about the sort of current state of where we are. And what he will tell you is that for the current customer satisfaction across the piece in the States, we are at a 17-year low.
Wow. Okay?
Customer satisfaction has not been as low as this for 17 years. Now, you may turn around and say, that's because of COVID, isn't it? Well, the answer is no, it's not because of COVID. Because between 2010 and 2019, only a third of organizations within that index that deals with all of the different organizations, only a third of organizations improved their customer experience. So 2010, 2019, that's before the pandemic, okay? So two thirds of organizations, despite the fact that customer experience was at an all-time high, despite the fact that we're doing lots of surveys and blah, 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 customer satisfaction didn't increase, and actually it's now declined. Now, you can get into a whole conversation around, well, why do we think that's the case? One of the key reasons I think it's the case is, well, two key reasons. One is, I don't think organizations think about how a customer is feeling, okay? And therefore, they don't think about how do they design their experience to do that. And secondly, it goes back to the thing I talked about at the top of the show, which is I think they're focused on the wrong things. I think they're focused on the things that customers tell them that they want. So you mentioned, interestingly enough, about your mobile phone. Mm-hmm. Prior to the iPhone, I bet you didn't go, you know what? What I would really like is one phone that's got GPS, I can play all my music, I can access the internet, it's a touch screen, et cetera, et cetera. I'll lay your money, you didn't say that. Yeah. It wasn't until Steve Jobs came up and said, this is the smartphone technology, that everyone went, yeah, that's exactly what I want. Because yeah. Steve Jobs knew what customers really wanted. It goes back to the Disney salad, rather than what they were saying that they wanted to. I remember going into Nokia about 6 months after the Apple iPhone was being introduced. And that, but in those days, everybody was buying a 3210. And the battery used to last 5 days. And I remember having a conversation with people in Nokia who were going, yeah, it's never going to survive because you have to charge your battery every day. And, you know, think about it. Because the Nokia used to last 5 days, and they thought that that was going to stop everyone buying it. And obviously, you know, the rest is history, as they say. So the point I'm trying to make is, again, it's that emotional context that's really missing. And going back to that survey, customer loyalty, you know, whether people are actually looking at those things.
Yeah. Well, you're so right. I mean, it's not about asking people what they want you to make for them. It's about understanding what problems they're trying to solve and then creating something that solves their problem that they never imagined. I mean, the famous Henry Ford quote of, if I asked people what they wanted, I would have made faster horses, right? Sure. People can't imagine something that doesn't exist. And that's where those innovative companies really emerge. And I think too, like, I do think the pandemic has had an impact on, you know, customer satisfaction because people have higher expectations now. Sure. It's not because the pandemic has made people miserable, although it has in some cases. I think there are, you know, certainly smarter choices being made in how we spend our money and how we spend our time and our energy. And we are solving different problems in our lives than we were a couple of years ago. And if companies are falling behind and figuring out what that stuff is, then yeah, customer experience is going to take a hit. And you mentioned the beginning of the conversation, like all of the surveying that's happening, any ethnography that's being done, that is part of the customer experience.
Yeah.
And if that's not improving, then not only are you not, you're focusing on the wrong areas, you're not getting the right information, you're also creating more bad experiences through the insights portion of your job and the research that you're doing. So really, like, not just improving the products and the experiences that you're creating, but improving the way that you're understanding customers is such a key part of that too.
Yes, no, absolutely. And you know, I mean, let's give you a practical example. We did some research for a client a little while ago, and this was for a construction equipment manufacturer, okay? And in construction equipment, you would think to yourself that the thing that's going to drive value the most would be the product, the durability of the product, the price of the product, because you're talking about construction equipment, you know, big stuff. Mm-hmm. What we discovered was that that wasn't the thing that drove most value. What drove most value was whether the individual felt that they were being cared for as a person. Okay. Mm. Now, you know, again, we did a podcast on this a few weeks ago. How do you make someone feel like you cared for them as a person? So in fact, Jen, sorry to put you under the spot again, but just think about the last time you felt cared for as a person. What did that person do? Why did you feel cared for? What made you think that they've cared for you?
So I think it's probably about, you know, when someone follows up on something, right? It's like, you know, I'm having a hard day, right? And a week later, somebody says, hey, how you doing with that thing, right?
It's
that indication that somebody's paying attention and cares enough to like not be stuck in their own world.
Yes.
But actually think about you later on and check and follow up and check in.
Yes. And that's a really good example. Yeah. So, you know, if you think about that, and you said an important word there, paid attention. Mm-hmm. Okay. In other words, they listened. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, they took, and you said They took time, okay? And they demonstrated, so they then demonstrated, they reached out to you, they demonstrated that they listened, they demonstrated that they took the time to do that, and you feel cared for, okay? So when a customer, when you as an individual feel cared for, typically it's around those things, but it's, you know, and it's also around, do I feel that this person is genuinely listening to me? Now, convert that into the business world and convert that into designing an experience. Well, if you want your customers to feel cared for, guess what? You need to listen to them. You need to pay attention to them. You know, you need to spend time then on reaching out to them later. So now you need, you're now talking about, well, how do we design our systems to enable us to do that? Now, those are the things, again, you can measure. You know, you can measure a week later, did we reach out to you to discuss what was discussed last week? Do you feel we listen to you on the call? You know, do you feel that we pay attention to you? You can measure those things. And those are indicators of the emotion. Yeah, those are indicators that if you're doing those things, the customer is likely to feel cared for. You can also ask, you know, well, does the customer, do you feel that we care for you as a person? That's great. But there are then tactical things that you can start to measure as well.
Yeah, this is so timely. I'll tell you a little story. We each week with our entire team, pretty much a good chunk of the team, we have a meeting every Monday, and I'm sure everybody hates my stupid words of the week or phrases of the week. And today's word that we talked about today or phrase was active listening. Right. And yep. It's about, you know, exactly what you're describing, like listening to understand, not listening to respond, really focusing and paying attention. We talked about too, how hard it is in a virtual environment. And I know a lot of researchers out there are doing these IDIs and focus groups via Zoom or, you know, platforms like this. And it's hard when there's so many other things in between you and the other person. When you're face to face, you're just there, but there's other tabs open and there's other pings and notifications. Yes. And so really focusing on that active listening is the only way that you can actually respond and make someone feel cared for. So this is so timely. And I think that these skills are something that maybe a few years ago were considered too soft. Like there is no business application for listening. And I love that we're having these conversations now. It's just a different world where, you know, companies are talking about really caring about what's going on in consumers' life beyond just the fact that they buy their products.
Yes.
Like what is happening in your day?
Yes. No, and let me give you another example that, that I think plays into exactly what you're saying. We did some work with a hospital system in Texas, and they had been doing lots of research, and their customers are saying to them, or the patients were saying to them, that they didn't have enough time with a doctor. So that was the feedback. We don't have enough time with doctors. Therefore, the hospital system was just about to spend a load of money on increasing the amount of time that patients spent with doctors. Okay, makes sense. We went in there and looked at this world from that different perspective, i.e., you know, not just what customers are saying, but what they're doing, etc. And what we discovered was that it wasn't that patients felt that doctors need to spend more time with them. What we discovered was that the patients were feeling that the doctor didn't listen to them.
Okay?
And how that manifests itself was, well, you're not spending enough time with me. Okay. Now, the irony is that you could have doubled the amount of time that you'd spent with the doctor and it wouldn't have improved it. In fact, it would have made it worse because now you're wasting my time even more. Okay. Why did we discover that patients felt that? Because they'd just installed a new computer system and the doctor was spending lots of time filling out all the details on the new computer system. But there is, when under normal research, you just say, what's the issue? Well, the issue is not enough time with the doctor. You spend all your time and effort and do that. And then you suddenly realize that it hasn't improved satisfaction, et cetera, when actually the issue is about listening. So getting under the skin, going back to that emotion, subconscious, psychological, getting under the skin and understanding customers at that more behavioral level is really important. And the way that you then interpret their results becomes really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you, you talked on your podcast, The Intuitive Customer, about the future of customer experience. Tell us a little bit about that. What's your opinion about the future of customer experience? And also, what's your opinion on the future of customer research?
Okay, so I'll take a step back now. Big, deep breath.
Okay.
So I think that we are just about to enter a different sort of transition. So if I go back 20 years, when I started in this industry, nobody really knew what customer experience was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nobody was talking about it. What was being talked about was CRM. And I spent the first 5 years just talking to people about what's a customer experience. Now, why am I telling you this? Because I'm seeing the same signs now, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm seeing that people are, whilst they're talking about customer experience, you know, it feels like they've been doing a lot of it. I go back to the stats, 17-year low. People are starting to say, particularly as you get close to recessions and stuff like that, why are we doing this? Is it giving us the return? All those things. In fact, I did a podcast on this a little while ago and wrote a long article on this. The parallels between the end of CRM and the end and the start of customer experience and where we are today are very, very similar. And in my view, what's happening is that there is a new wave of change coming. And that wave of change is a lot of people are calling it customer science. Okay.
Mm.
Now, let me be clear. That's not saying that customer experience is going away. It's not. CRM didn't go away. Mm-hmm. CRM went from a $13 billion a year industry to a $70 billion a year industry over those 20 years. It didn't go away. It just became business as usual. Okay. Mm. Most organizations can't survive now without CRM. Right. But customer science is the fusion of three things. It's the fusion of data, which is a lot of what we've been talking about here today, different data sources, surveys, social media, profiling, what's customers doing, website analytics, blah, 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 blah. So data. It's a fusion of AI, which is obviously growing massively. Mm-hmm. And it's a fusion of behavioral science. So again, looking at the world through, looking at the data and building your AI with the knowledge of how do people do things. And those three things are coming together. And if you said to me, well, who's doing that then? It's very simple. Facebook, Google, Amazon, you know, all the big tech companies. We had somebody on the show the other day from FinTech, a behavioral scientist on the show. And I said to her, I said, how many of the FinTech companies are doing behavioral, you know, have got behavioral scientists on the team? And she said, all of them. Yeah. Wow. So all of those organizations are starting to do that. And I think that we're in the foothills of this revolution of customer science. So if you went forward 10 years, I think that customer science would be the next wave. And I think that the key word that will be used at that point is proactivity, that mm-hmm. we are going to be competing around a proactive experience. So we will be able to use through the knowledge of behavioral science, through the application of AI, through the data that we've collected upon customers, we will be able to predict what the customer would do next and give it to them before they even know about it. So an example of that would be, and I don't know if you've had this, Jen, recently, my Apple phone the other day said, oh, you tend to listen to this radio station at this time of the day each day. Would you like us to create a widget for you? You know? And I thought, bloody hell, that would be useful. You know? But the point is, it's a proactive experience that was built into the new software, and it's now, they're now suggesting it because they've looked at my patterns of behavior, etc. So I think that I think that you know, that's what's the future of customer experience. I think if you lay it on top of that research, then again that whole area of research comes into that data collection, and again we've talked about that sort of behavioral science. So I think the rigid look at just looking at surveys, surveys I don't think will ever go away, but they're going to become less important as time goes on, and other ways of collecting data and interpreting the data will come to the fore, basically.
Yeah, that proactive approach is really key. And other like CX leaders I've spoken to have said something similar, you know, especially around measuring whether or not an experience is positive or negative. Like, we probably have enough data now to know whether we've delivered a positive or negative experience, because we know the recipe, right? You've been doing this research for X amount of years, 20 years on your business, and what creates a five versus a one on your NPS or whatever.
Sure.
You don't have to ask people to tell you if you've created a positive experience every time, because you should know if you did or not, based on that formula and that proactive, hey, we know this, you know, your Amazon Prime delivery was 2 days late and that's a bad experience. Deal with that proactively. Or like you said, Apple serving things up based on your behavior. They started doing that several years ago around with the maps.
Yes.
As soon as I would get in my car, it would tell me like, oh, 4 o'clock every day, I drive to this place to pick up my son from school. It knew I was going there instead of somewhere else, and told me how long it was going to take to get there.
Yeah. You know, we're in the foothills. We're in the foothills of that. And you know, it will become more, it will be, with AI and everything else, it's going to become even more advanced as time goes on.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been a really fascinating conversation. I feel like, you know, we went a little off topic from where I wanted to start, but I'm glad we did, because there's a lot of good stuff in what you shared. So I really appreciate your time. Make sure you guys find Colin on LinkedIn, Intuitive Customer Podcast, anywhere else that I missed. Where can people find you?
Our website is beyondphilosophy.com. So beyondphilosophy.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Jen. Cheers.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for listening in. Next week, I'm talking with Jason Wright, president of the Washington Commanders. You heard that right. Don't miss it. We'll see you then.